In this episode of the ZX Spectrum, we chat to BBC Blue Peter presenter Richie Driss. Having only joined the show this year, we explore how Richie came to have the job of presenting on the world's longest-running TV show, 60 years and counting, and dive into the role TV has in young people's lives today. It's a challenging media landscape for any broadcaster, so how is Blue Peter engaging young people, and why does this flagship show mean so much to generations of people? We also touch on what being a role model means to Richie and where his passion for content creation and presenting came from in the first place. Just a note on the quality of the recording. We did have a few technical issues with our equipment, which meant we had to record directly from the laptop down the line and not through our usual recorder with proper microphones. But it doesn't detract from the topics we cover, so really hope you enjoy.
Hello, welcome to the ZX Spectrum. My name's Lizzie Hodgson.
And my name's Brother Ralph.
And today we are delighted to be speaking down the line to the new Blue Peter presenter, Richie Driss. Richie has a background in producing and presenting for Joe Media, but he also works on local radio, launched his own series on urban music website GRM Daily. Richie, welcome.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
You're more than welcome. We are just very happy to have you here.
Yeah, for the audience at home, it's been a bit of a mix of trying to get technology to work so we could sort of make it work today.
Technology is superb when it works.
Terrible when it doesn't. Okay, right, we're just going to crack on straight into it, Richie, because we know that the
line
could go at any moment. How did you actually become to be a presenter of Blue Peter? I mean, we know it is the longest running children's TV show in the world. It's an absolute, I mean, it must be just the most phenomenal thing. How did you actually get it?
So, divine intervention? No, in all seriousness, I've been at Joe Media for a couple of years and I got an email. I got followed on Twitter and Instagram by a producer at the BBC. And I thought, oh, okay, that doesn't happen every single day. Followed back and I got a DM on Twitter and then on Instagram as well, because I was at work at the time, saying, have you got a work email address? We'd like to, no, just that's it. We've got a work email address. And then an email saying, yeah, we'd like to invite you for a screen test for Blue Peter and Engineers. That was it, to be honest. There's no incredible story of meeting the right person at the right time. I understand, and I've since met the person. I've since worked with the person that spotted my show reel on YouTube.
Yeah, so,
and I work with them every week now.
Yeah, because the interesting aspect for me is I find that really awesome that it was kind of found through social media, because I feel like that's such a sort of modern way to do it. Because Lizzie and I are both with like traditional agents, you know, and they go out and put us out there. But did you have sort of agent before that or anything like that, or was it purely just like it just the internet sort of did its thing and by a sort of stroke of luck it sort of found that?
I had never had an agent in my life. That was it was pure luck. And I understand that I went up against sort of my competition was found through agents, but I also understand that YouTube was thoroughly examined for showreels and stuff like that. It was very lucky, to be honest. Very, very lucky that mine got spotted.
Maybe it was the fact that you, you had something there. And I think there's something around that authentic content that is really, really required now. And you obviously had that, you know, you've got that authentic quality about you that is quite refreshing.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, in terms of, YouTube and social media, they're such massive, powerful things these days. The digital world is all about numbers. And I've got a grand total of about 3 subscribers on YouTube. So in terms of how I got found, you know, I don't have a following. I think my showreel has got about 150 views. So in that aspect, I think it was quite lucky. And it just so happened that all of the content spoke to the right people, and then I got the invite. Obviously, I had to go through screen tests and all that. You know, the job wasn't just given to me there and then. I still had to work to get it. But that was obviously a big stepping stone.
Yeah.
Being spotted in the first place.
Yeah. And so, you know, when were you a fan of sort of Blue Peter when you were younger?
Oh, of course. Stuart Miles and Katie Hill were my presenters. And then Connie Huck joined as well. in the time that I watched it as well. So yeah, definitely. Absolutely.
Yeah, because for sort of our international, the people listening internationally who don't know who Blue Peter is, it's a bit of a sort of, I would say, quite a legendary show here in the UK that's been running for...
60 years.
60 years.
Yeah.
It's
the running children's television show in the world. I think everybody in Britain... probably alive today, to be honest, it sort of remembered and sort of had Blue Peter. We're seeing at the moment, and Lizzie and I sort of coming into this new production world ourselves, are sort of discovering that, young people are sort of dropping off of television and that sort of thing. Do you think sort of like television and, maybe particularly Blue Peter is, sort of relevant today?
Definitely. It's absolutely got its audience, because although there's so much more choice and variety for children these days with YouTube and social media and a billion and one more channels than I had when I was growing up, with that comes certain potential pitfalls, especially when it comes to YouTube, whereby, there aren't the parental locks on YouTube, to my knowledge, aren't what they could and should be, not only in terms of children accessing content, but also in the responsibility of the person who's uploading it. There have been some prime examples within the last couple of years of influencers or bloggers or whatever you want to address them as, uploading stuff that by any stretch of the imagination should just never be touched upon in any way, and without naming names or anything like that. I think we can all think of a few examples.
Yeah.
So while there is a ton more choice, as I said, I think to have something that is reliable as Blue Peter, that is still around today, means it's very much still got its place.
Mm-hmm. I think there's something interesting there, because when I was growing up, I was Karen Keating generation and that generation. It was something also that for my generation, I think that we found that safety. That was the world back in the 80s. It wasn't quite as complex perhaps it is now, but we still had fears and things like that. And to have that place where you felt safe and it was inclusive, and it also was a bit exciting. And I know the world is very different now, and young people in particular have access to so many more things. They travel more. We know they're traveling more. They're more global in the way that they, interact with each other. Yeah. All of the influences are global influences. Back in the day in the 80s, I loved seeing these characters from Blue Peter going off to, they went to Russia, which was like, it was like the Cold War. Things like that, it's still... Yeah. But it was something that made you feel safe and included, and it was for you. And I think there's something really interesting that you're saying about the way that a lot of stuff online is for young people, but it's actually it's a bit inappropriate young people as well. And do you think eroded a little bit of that kind of trust with young people around how we should be and the content we should be sharing with them? Or do you think it's just life now? They are going to come up against things that are a little bit, perhaps that if we'd seen it 5-10 years ago, we wouldn't have been so accepting of it, but it just is now. And Blue Peter represents that safe harbour.
Yeah, I agree. I would say that I don't think we're ever going to be able to shelter young people from, some would call it, the realities of life, however you want to address certain aspects of life. I don't think they're ever going to be able to shelter them. But it's fascinating what you said about the safe place, because I feel like the more things change with regards to the digital world now and some of the politics left, right, and centre in the world now, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Because when I got back in touch with Blue Peter, like it was an old friend, when I started watching Blue Peter again in preparation for my screen tests, I was thinking to myself, wow, this is exactly as I remember it, as being like a safe space, escapism, and a bit of positivity in a world that isn't always necessarily that. And I was so pleasantly surprised. I really enjoyed rewatching watching Radzi and Lindsay And I couldn't believe just how much I was enjoying it as a 30-year-old adult now, something that is predominantly aimed at 6 to 15-year-olds.
Yeah, it's surprising at the moment. I've been watching quite lots of children's TV for a project, and I'm just like, oh, there's this some like fascination of, oh, this is weirdly like entertaining, you know? It's like this aspect of...
Yeah.
I feel like it helps you sort of relive your sort of childhood. Have you sort of ended up watching any other sort of children's televisions other than Blue Peter?
Yeah, I have. I've watched a bit of Match of the Day Kickabout, and this is a lot more in terms of, you know, my now colleagues. I've gotten it back into News Round, Match of the Day Kickabout as well as Art Ninja, because I know the guys that present it now, so it's interesting for me to watch them. And again, it's interesting to see the amount of variety that is on TV now for kids.
So do you think that with the development of Blue Peter, you say that it's kind of like still the same, however, how has it changed for the more, you know, for the Generation Z and all the young people that are coming through? Are there differences, however, within that safe space?
Of course, we've got to adapt with the adapt with the times with some of what we can and can't show. Because Blue Peter is such a household name and such a British institution, on the one hand, that is good. But on the other hand, it does make it, you know, from now on, I am no longer sort of Richie Drist. I am Blue Peter's Richie Drist. And if anyone makes the news, you know, particularly if it's a bad way, then it's no longer X who has been living their own life for the last 30 years. It's Blue Peter's ex who's been living their life for the last 30 years that has got that label attached to them.
And it has had a bit of controversy in the past. I remember there was some controversy a few years back with association, I think it was, with one other TV presenter, and that somebody,
that was quite a few years
back. It was, but it shocks us. It shocks people. Yeah. And I think there's something saying, Richie, it shocks you because you want to be part of that. You want to, like, it comes back to that safe space. You want Blue Peter to be this kind of, like, you know, it's a national treasure. And you are, you're the 38th presenter, aren't you?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Which is not, I mean, that's not over that's, 60 years.
That's a short list.
That's a short list.
Yeah. I was surprised as well, to be fair, that it was the number as low as 38, yeah.
Yeah.
And you're looking after this national treasure, do you feel responsible?
Yeah, I do. I absolutely do. And again, to go back to you know, what you asked about the differences between, say, back in the 30, 40, 50 years ago and now, our audiences have changed, technology has changed, and it means that, you know, I have to be far more aware of myself and my actions than, you know, John Noakes did, and in fact, he climbed Nelson's column, you know, without any sort of health and safety support, without any ropes, without any harnesses or anything like that. Thankfully, I don't think I'd be allowed to do that these days.
Just as a question, because we know that Blue Peter presenters have to go through a whole load of physical, mental, and, you know, sticky back plastic tests. What were your tests for kind of like getting through to become the Blue Peter presenter?
So my first screen test involved, I'm getting my screens as well, I had three altogether. One of them were studio, and a part of that was holding a boa constrictor as the resident, yeah, of course, as the resident Blue Peter animal expert sort of spoke about him. I need to ask questions while holding this boa constrictor. And put it like this, if it was a large spider, I don't think I'd have passed that test, but thankfully it was a large boa constrictor instead, and I was all right with it. And also I had to make a confetti cannon in the shape of a pig as well. As well as delivering a confetti cannon.
Of course.
Yeah, obviously, a confetti cannon, which I think was celebrating Chinese New Year. I think, if I remember correctly, it's the Year of the Pig.
Yeah.
So I had to make a confetti cannon. And this is all obviously while delivering dialogue, interacting with some kids. Me and Lindsay had a bit of a dance-off with some kids as well. And then there was also an assault course, which I had to take on as well, which I was terrible at. But that's the thing, is that The bosses said to me when I got awarded the job, I wasn't necessarily the best at the assault course, but it was that I put my personality into it. And while I didn't get the quickest time, they were just thoroughly entertained by the fact that I kept engaging with the camera and the audience. And I put my personality into it. So
I'm guessing they didn't tell you that in the original DM. I'm guessing they didn't go, oh yeah, you know.
No. Do you want to come down to Manchester to hold some snakes? No, thank you. No, I'm all right, thanks.
You would probably be like, are you really from the BBC? Are you just
yeah, pretty much, yeah.
So you worked like previously, your previous experience with you worked at Joe Media. You were a producer and presenter there, were you not? And you,
you
interviewed quite a few big names. Did it prepare you for the role that you've got now? You know, what did you learn from that experience?
I don't think that there's much that can really prepare you for live television and holding snakes and doing rally driving. But no, in all seriousness, I did learn a ton of skills there. In particular, a lot of what I did, as you just touched upon, I produced myself, so it meant liaising with, I did a lot of film stuff, for example, so liaising with the PRs of the film and saying, look, I want to do this idea, I want to do this,
yeah.
I want to be able to speak to X, Y, Z about left, right and centre, whatever it was. So there's a lot more sort of admin-y people management and then also taking that opportunity to the bosses and saying, look, I'd like to take these resources for this because, you know, we've got this person to do X, Y, and Z. And some of them were brilliant. Some of the stuff that I got to do was, you know, I would never, ever, ever imagine that I'd be able to direct Samuel L. Jackson and James McAvoy smashing keyboards up in a hotel room, for example. Very, very surreal.
Have you always been a self-starter? Have you always been one of those people that's just kind of like, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to find a way of doing it?
Yeah, 100%. I didn't start pursuing a job in the media industry until I was 24, and I came to a crossroads and I thought, I really need to, it's now or never, I need to sort myself out and either go for it wholeheartedly or not, as the case may be. I before that, I dabbled in office jobs in sales and recruitment, and I knew it wasn't for me.
Classic early 20s job.
Right, yeah. Yeah, bars and door-to-door sales and pubs and all sorts.
Yeah.
I just knew it wasn't for me. And I did a bit of radio. And then again, I got to a point where I thought, I need to carve my own lane. So that's exactly what I'm going to do. And then produced and created a series that's still going to an extent on Graham Daly. They're taking a bit of a break, but it, you know, has been still going.
And so this kind of like, you know, this inner drive that you've had, is it something that you saw when you were growing up, or have you grown into it? And I think it either way is fine. You know what I mean? I'm interested to see how people, what their inner drive is and how they arrive at that. You know, what was it for you? And also, why media?
I think that my inner drive, this is going to sound pretty corny probably, but it comes from music and film.
Yeah.
My dad, for example, absolutely, he loves his film. So I wasn't raised on film, you know. Obviously I played football a lot as a kid as well, but it was something that I always used to do with my dad, just to sit and watch films. So I've always had a love of films and music as well. You know, I was raised on a lot of, on neo soul and stuff like that. And some of the neo soul that I listened to, for example, Marvin Gaye, was, you know, that idea of going from nothing to something. And that, you know, Marvin Gaye not only touched on it, but then it went into rap and hip hop as well. So a lot lyrically, my favourite sort of music was that whole idea of going from nothing to something. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I came out of the ghetto and all this kind of thing, left, right and centre. But a lot of media these days is who you know, not what you know.
Yeah.
And I understand that, but it is what it is. And don't get me wrong, if I grew up and my dad was, I don't know, football presenter on ITV, then of course I would take and use whatever advantages I've got. You'd be silly not to. But yeah, I think that's where my drive came from.
And I think it also, I mean, we're seeing this with young people, the impact of kind of like creative content, and that they're creators themselves without even knowing that they're creative. You know, the way that they use social media, and the way we went, today is the big is the big climate strike day. We're recording this on the climate strike day, and we're down here in Brighton, and we popped out and to go and show our support to what I thought was going to be a few hundred school kids. It turned out to be thousands and thousands.
The roads, the traffic was up the roads and everything like that.
But what I'm feeling from that is what, you know, Brandon and I work a lot with young people, specifically under 24s, and one of our big drives is to give young people that opportunity to be heard, or to, you know, to use their enthusiasm and their insight in positive ways. And what we're seeing, as was reflected back out to us today in the climate strike, was they're super passionate about this massive issue, which is really shaming all of the, you know, the adults among us, and B, they're creative. You know, they were there with their banners, they were there, you know, filming. We know that this content is going to be mashed up because they have the opportunity to do it and they understand it, and that's how they communicate. And I think that what's really interesting about where we are at the moment is you also touched on the fact that, you know, in broadcast media, as is the case actually with a lot of industries, it's who you know. I think it's really important that we kind of like try to diminish that aspect, and it should be, we've got to try and work together to give to surface young people and their talent and the opportunities and make it less of a closed shop. So, you know, I think that that's one of the things that Brandon and I really find really, really important. So how, if you were, you know, if you're 15 years younger and you were 15-year-old and you had this passion, what would you be doing to help you get into the media? What would you be doing at this point, do you think?
I'd have started what I was doing.
Yeah.
So if I was 15 years old, I think I would have, well, I don't think I know, I would have started doing what I did at the age of 24. So, you know, thinking of a niche idea and an open market, and then filming a pilot myself, you know, obviously back in the 15 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to have done that. I wouldn't have had the equipment. So 15-year-old now, they'll have a mobile phone with any sort of video camera on it. And it's never about the quality per se. You look on YouTube and you see some of the people who are making, you know, have the most numbers on YouTube are just sitting with a phone in probably in their bedroom talking about computer games or talking about makeup or talking about whatever it is they could, you know, climate change, whatever it is they could be talking about. So now the technology is readily available to a lot more people than it was back in the day. So it's literally just about finding something that you're passionate in and exploiting that passion, for want of a better phrase.
Yeah. So where we met you, Richie, was at the Children's Media Conference earlier this year.
Yes.
And
we
did a ZX Spectrum recording there with a group of young activists. Some of them were to do with the climate change. Some of them were, you know, working in businesses and disrupting businesses. Others were political. We chatted to quite a few of the young volunteers who were there. So there were these, you know, really eager young volunteers at this conference. And again, I think it is this self-starter attitude that we're seeing far more with young people. I think it's the technology is allowing them to do it, but also something has shifted with this generation. That feels a little bit like, because everybody's doing it, it's not just one or two.
Yeah.
There are some notable people who stand out.
It's like the people that are on the streets today. It's, you know, sort of petitioning for our government to make changes which they think will impact our future, which I totally agree with.
Yeah.
I feel like I made myself disconnect from that. Definitely, we were out in the street there supporting it. But, you know, I think for me, it's a lot more now about that, you know, there's these sort of inspiring things and those sort of things that, you know, we can look up to and sort of find role models in other YouTubers and that sort of thing. I'm interested, sort of, what were your sort of role models when you were growing up, and were they in media or were they sort of in
football
or
all of the above? Football, film, media. Denzel Washington, who I was very, very lucky enough to actually sit down and interview about this time last year, which was nuts. Peter Schmeichel, Manchester United goalkeeper, that's the reason I started supporting Man United, one of the reasons. When it came to broadcast media, Trevor Nelson, Zane Lowe, they were master for me. I used to watch, for anyone that's old enough to remember, The Lick on MTV Base. Trevor Nelson fronted that and it was amazing. Zane Lowe as well. and also listening to Chris Moyles on Radio 1 on the way to school every single morning. My mum didn't enjoy listening to him, but I absolutely loved it. It was brilliant. So yeah, listening to him was inspiring as well.
So do you see yourself as a role model?
I mean, it comes with the territory. I never consider myself a role model, but it does come with the territory. And I keep saying to people the weight, not weight in a bad way, but the size of the job that I have now hasn't sunk in. And it's not until people ask me questions like, do you consider yourself a role model, that it does begin to sink in a little bit more every single time. And yeah, I mean, I guess I am. I do have to carry myself a certain way. I like to think that's sort of in my nature anyway. I'd like to think that I am as much of myself on screen as off screen. Obviously, you know, there's a little bit of, for cameras, there's a little bit more, not exaggerated, a little bit of exaggeration for the cameras, if you like. But I'd like to think I'm pretty much exactly the same on Blue Peter as I am off screen. As much as I'm a role model, I also like to think it comes naturally to me.
But also, I mean, we've all of us have just rattled off who our generation of Blue Peter presenters were. And you're going to be a presenter for a generation. And in, you know, 15, 20 years time, they're going to go, oh, you know, it's Richie Driss. So that, I think, I mean, that's just phenomenal, you know. But equally with this, and I want to just kind of like loop back to what you said at the beginning, that this is, you know, Blue Peter's a safe area, a safe space for, it's a safe show. I don't think safe has to mean boring, and I don't think it doesn't have to be challenging. And I think that's the other thing with Blue Peter, that you can be challenging with what you're doing, and people will remember, we were shaped by it, and you're shaping a generation. So what...
Oh gosh.
I think, what are you excited about in that kind of like, just not, you know, you are, I'm not saying you're this godlike thing, but you have a responsibility. There is, the world is a complex place. It is, you know, there are, as we, again, coming back to the climate crisis and the school strike today that happened, there are some big challenges. How do you see that playing out for young people? And do you think that we have a role to give them hope as well?
Of course, yeah. You touched on, you know, this, you know, Blue Peter being a safe space, and that doesn't necessarily mean it's boring. I've already done, I can't talk about them too much, but I've already done challenges which I haven't necessarily enjoyed. But the whole idea of them is to give it a go. So whether you don't have to be brilliant at everything by any stretch of the imagination. But it's one thing being good at something, but it's another thing like just giving it a go and seeing whether you enjoy it or not. Because I've done some challenges, again, I can't speak about them yet, but I've done some stuff which I never considered. It's easy to do. It's not inaccessible. It's not, the access that I had wasn't necessarily inaccessible, but it's just something I thought that's so difficult. I'm not even gonna attempt that, and I gave it a go, and it turned out to be not only really, really good, but really, really fun, and I quite enjoyed it. And then there are others that I would never in a million years thought I'd be able to get the access to do. I did them. I didn't necessarily enjoy it. Enjoy it would be the wrong word. However, I have got so much more respect because I've got that sort of I can relate a lot more to the people that undertake the challenge that I took on every single day for a living. And although I didn't necessarily, in inverted commas, enjoy it, there's always the positive of I gave it a try, I reached a target, or the target was to give it a try, and just my respect for the people that do that every single day is absolutely incredible.
Mm-hmm. And you know, Blue Peter is such a staple. I feel like we've talked about how big it is in children's TV, but I feel you know, it's kind of got that wider impact now because of how many generations it had. You know, how sort of important do you see the show is at the moment and will continue to be sort of in this wider media landscape?
I'd like to think that although it's the original show in terms of pretty average taking on extraordinary challenges, I'd like to think it will remain in that space, you know, for many, many years to come, despite the fact that, you know, with YouTube and loads of other channels, there are other programs that do similar stuff, but Blue Peter was sort of the originator, so to speak. Yeah. So there is a lot that we do, you know, and a lot that we get given access for on the basis that it is Blue Peter. It's the longest running children's TV program in the world. And also Blue Peter isn't, it's not just challenges. There's far more to it than that. There's, you know, along with the challenges, it's just encouraging children and young people to try something that they haven't tried before. And, you know, you can associate the word challenge with that if you want, but it could be something as simple as trying a new sport for an hour. Like we had the 2019 sport badge. That's literally go and try a sport that you've never tried before for 1 hour. You know, in terms of a challenge, some people would see it as a challenge, some people wouldn't. But it's all about trying it. You know, along with the sort of challenge aspect, Blue Peter has got, you know, the history to go with it and to back it up as well.
Richie, we've got to call it quits there. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Really.
Absolute pleasure.
That was fantastic.
Yeah, no problem at all.
So where can people find you on social?
On social media, I am at Richie Driss. There is no T in Richie, so it's RichieDriss, Richie Driss. All one word, all on Twitter and Instagram. That's me.
And Blue Peter's obviously it's every Thursday, isn't it?
Blue Peter, every Thursday, 5:30 on CBBC. And it's always available on iPlayer as well.
Thank you, Richie.
Not a problem, thank you.
And thank you, Lizzie. Where can people find more about you?
You can find me at lizziehodgson.com. And thank you, Brandon. Where can people find you?
You can find me at brandonroth.com.
That's it. Thank you so much. See you later.
Loved this episode? Then head on over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. We'd really appreciate that. You've been listening to the ZX Spectrum podcast, a Studio B production.